According to the Bible, she succumbed to the wiles of the serpent and then tempted her soulmate Adam into a sin that recast the fate of mankind. It's a fascinating story with meaning for the ages, and it's the subject of our interview for this week's program with Eileen Dugan and her guest, Pamela Norris.
She is temptation itself. As the serpent slyly watches over her bare shoulder, she hands the fruit to the unsuspecting man. She seems to be oblivious to the sorrows to come, unconcerned that she is precipitating the fall of man, unaware of how this instant will forever be remembered. She, of course, is Eve, if not that of the strictest biblical reading, at least the Eve of popular imagination, beautiful, sensuous, and devastatingly beguiling. With us to discuss the history of Eve is Miss Pamela Norris, literary scholar and author of the recent book, Eve, A Biography, a study of our perception of history's first bad girl from biblical times through the present. Welcome, Pamela. Just what does the Bible tell us about the story of Eve? I mean, how prominent, for example, is she in the Old Testament?
Well, interestingly, she's not very prominent at all. Eve appears only in the first book of the Old Testament, in Genesis, where there are two stories which tell of the creation of the first man and woman. The first story doesn't mention Eve by name at all, and it appears in the first book of Genesis. And it tells how God created the world in 6 days, and how on the sixth day he creates the first human couple, the man and the woman, and gives them dominion over every living thing, and he instructs them to be fruitful and multiply. Now, chapter 2 of Genesis goes back to a much older and better-known story, and this is where the familiar Eve of myth appears. And in this story, God creates Adam out of dust, and he puts him in a garden. And later, he makes a woman out of one of Adam's ribs to be his partner, to be his helpmate. And this story then goes on to tell how the woman is tempted by a serpent to eat forbidden fruit. And as a result of this, Adam and Eve have to leave the Garden of Eden and set out into the world. Adam is condemned to dig the ground to produce food, and Eve is condemned to give birth to children. And they also are both condemned to death eventually at the end of their lives. And this marks the beginning of human history and time. Now, Eve actually acquires her name at the end of this account because Adam calls her Eve, mother of all living. And the only later references to Eve in the Bible are in the context of her giving birth to sons, the two boys, Cain and Abel, and to the good son, Seth, who is the first real survivor, and he is the first in a line of very important men in early Judaism. He is the progenitor of both Noah and Abraham, who, of course, are sort of key characters in the Old Testament.
And how does Eve compare to the goddesses of the ancient Near East and Greek mythology, for example?
Well, this is very interesting. She's very different from these goddesses, simply because she is not a goddess. She was not revered as a goddess. Her role was to be a progenitor. She was the mother of all living. She was never worshipped, and unlike the Hebrew goddess Ashtoreth, or Canaanite Asherah, or the Greek goddess Artemis, she had no supernatural powers to protect women in childbirth. Her closest resemblance, in fact, in mythology, is to Pandora, who in classical mythology was the first human woman. And she was created really as a punishment for human men. I mean, Pandora is known as the beautiful evil, and from her sprang the race of women. She invented women, and women were regarded by the Greeks as troublemakers, people who bring all sorts of ills, hard work, disease, poverty, and so on to mankind. And so Eve has no goddess status, although there are some very, very nice stories in rabbinic tradition which give her status as a matriarch. She's married or matched to women like Sarah, who was the mother of Abraham, to Rebecca, who is the mother of Isaac, to Rachel, who's the mother of Jacob. But really, most seriously, Eve's status in Judaism, and indeed in the Bible, is this notion of motherhood and also of bringing death into the world. So unlike the powerful goddesses of the ancient Near East and the classical world, who control and elevate human destiny by their powers of life and death, Eve's importance is really undermined by the mortality to which she condemned the human race by eating forbidden fruit. So she's seen as quite a negative figure in terms of the Judaic tradition.
And how did she come to be interpreted by early Christian groups as well?
This is very interesting. Judaism loved telling stories, and so there is this very, very long tradition of storytelling in Judaism about Adam and Eve, which Christianity simply absorbed and then redefined according to its own needs. And if I can start a little bit with some of these early Jewish stories, sure, because they then feed into the Christian tradition, and it would help to explain this a little bit better. But the Jewish stories about Adam and Eve were really attempts to come to terms with ideas about where does evil come from, what are the origins of human suffering. The real problem for both Judaism and Christianity was that if you had monotheism as a religion, if you believed in an omnipotent God, how did you explain things like floods and famine and disease? And both the Jews and the Christians turned to the story of the Garden of Eden to try and explain this problem. Where did horrors come from? And in doing this, they developed the characters of Adam and Eve and their children far beyond the limits of the original Genesis story. One of the stories which gained great popularity was the tradition that Eve's temptation was a story of sexual conquest. Now, in the original story in Genesis, in the Old Testament, sexuality isn't really at issue. The forbidden fruit is not necessarily sex, and indeed for the very, very early Jewish groups, it wouldn't have been sex at all. But the story that became developed by the Jews and was then picked up by the Christians was the idea that Eve was tempted, sexually tempted, not by the serpent, but by somebody much more sinister, a rebel angel, who took his revenge on God by tempting Eve and then Adam into fatal disobedience. Now, this is a wonderful story. It's a very, very powerful story. And, of course, it was a story which Milton picked up as the basis for his great poem, Paradise Lost, many, many centuries later on.
And how go ahead.
I was just going to sort of go on and talk a little bit about how the early Christians took up the story of Eve. And it was really St. Paul who saw a connection between, not so much between Eve, as between Adam and Christ. And Paul explained that the death and resurrection of Christ reversed the curse on mankind, which was brought about by man's disobedience in the Garden of Eden. And Paul said, as in Adam all die, even so in Christ shall all be made alive. And at the same time, theologians at this period were quick to point out that it was Eve's fault, that this business of death was really Eve's fault. Adam was not deceived, that the woman being deceived was in the transgression. And they developed this idea that women would be saved in childbearing, which refers to God's commandment to Eve, in sorrow thou shalt bring forth children. So Christianity really emphasized the aspect of Eve as a wicked woman. She had brought distress on earth, but women could be saved from the curse of Eve by childbearing.
And how did medieval theologians continue this development of the notion of Eve?
Well, I think that probably, rather than talking about individual theologians, I can perhaps just sort of give you some kind of context. I wonder if this would be useful, because I think what is really important about how Eve evolved in the medieval period is the context of misogyny, this idea that a woman was sexually dangerous, and the idea that woman was very morally frail and liable to temptation. Now, both of these ideas derived directly from the story of Eve, which was hugely influential and which was endorsed by other popular heroines by stories about Pandora and about all those passionate, flawed women in Greek tragedy. So there was misogyny was current, but there was also a social reason why the story of Eve was very, very important to theologians. By this period, stable marriage, clear lines of inheritance were very, very significant to almost all sectors of society, but particularly to landowners and the nobility of early modern Europe, people who provided enormous financial support for the church. So you've got a situation where the church, the landowners, important people want to control sexuality. They particularly want to control female sexuality. They want to protect young women from promiscuous childbearing, and they want to impose taboos on the sexual behavior of young men. And so the idea of Eve, this notion of God's decree to Eve, thy desire shall be to thy husband and he shall rule over thee, was very, very useful to the church and very, very useful to the community at large, as was the widely promoted belief that women could be saved by childbearing. So again, Eve was brought in as kind of ammunition against women. You must be subjected to men, and it's very, very important that you have babies, but only within the context of appropriate marriage.
So how did Eve end up getting this image as being a beautiful sexual temptress?
I think it was just such an alluring idea. I think the idea of a beautiful woman offering forbidden fruit, offering forbidden temptations, has been current for absolutely centuries. I mean, there was Eve, first of all, in the Bible, but there are lots and lots of other tempting women in the Bible. Delilah springs to mind, tempting Samson. And this was a very, very seductive idea. And the rabbis, the whole rabbinic tradition, was absolutely convinced that that women, sexually alluring women, were out to tempt men, to attract them away from their respect for God, from their honorable lives. And nothing could be more alluring than this notion that Eve was actually a very, very beautiful woman, because beautiful women were absolutely taboo. And Eve was very, very quickly equated with all the other sexual temptresses that litter history and myth. She was like Helen of Troy, who was responsible for the death of so many men. She was like Cleopatra, who ruined Antony. And, of course, like Cleopatra, she was linked with a death-dealing serpent. She was like Pandora. She was like the Greek Lamia, a voluptuous snake woman who was fatal to women. She was also linked with the Jewish Lilith, Lilith, who was believed in some traditions to be Adam's first wife, a feminist who refused to have sex with Adam, and who was responsible for sexy dreams and for night emissions. She was a woman who stole a man's sexual power and self-control as he slept. So these notions of women who attracted you and forced you to do terrible things, they were terribly seductive in all of these traditions. Something that people like to talk about, oh, this is terrible, we mustn't, these women are ghastly creatures, and yet at the same time they're so beautiful, we cannot resist them.
Well, so far we've been talking about how men have interpreted Eve, but what do women have to say about Eve?
I think that there is a lot said about Eve by women, and the reason why we don't, we traditionally haven't got to hear about it very much, is that it was never promoted and never put out by men, so that you have, throughout history, you have a number of women who've said some very, very interesting things about Eve, but, you know, they say it and then their story dies away. One of the earliest and the most individual accounts of Eve was a series of commentaries by the visionary abbess Hildegard of Bingen, who was writing in the 12th century, and she has beautiful ideas about both Adam and Eve, in which she stresses the reciprocity of the relationship between men and women. She says that Adam sees his own image and likeness in Eve, and as they gaze at one another, their mutual gaze reflects the generations to come. So they're like two mirrors facing each other, endlessly duplicating any image that stands between them. She said that while Adam symbolizes the divinity of Christ, Eve represents Christ's humanity. Her primary significance in the divine scheme of things was to reveal the hidden God by giving him birth. So it's woman who gives birth to man and who then nurtures him. And she talks about procreation being an act of reciprocity, the air and the wind work together. And contrary to these negative views of sexuality which the early church fathers promoted, Hildegard stressed Adam's love for Eve. And all of these ideas supported Eve's dignity and her status and her importance in God's plan. Now, after Hildegard, a number of other women, Christine de Pizan, for example, the aristocratic French woman, she asserted the nobility of Eve. She said that Eve was created by a supreme craftsman, and like Adam, she was made in the image of God. And she also said that Eve's fault brought honor to humanity. It was a felix culpa, a happy fault, because if there hadn't been Eve, there wouldn't have been Christ, and there wouldn't have been the possibility of redemption and life eternal.
Well, we only have a moment remaining, but perhaps you could just say a few words about the meaning that the story of Eve, or perhaps even the history of the story of Eve, might hold for us today.
I think that the history of the story of Eve is not very positive, because what we see in the history of Eve was a story that was used again and again to repress and silence women. But if we want to read it as a story with a message for women today, we can actually say that it's a wonderful example of female initiative. By daring to eat the forbidden fruit, Eve laid claim to knowledge in all its richness and plenitude, and she kick-started humanity into history. Eden was very pleasant, but it was a very repetitive life. What Eve made possible was the challenge and variety of change. She offered the opportunity for work, the beginnings of a moral life. Once she and Adam had tasted the forbidden fruit, they knew what good and evil meant. They could begin to take responsibility for their actions. So really, the story of Eve is a stunning endorsement of female energy, of female courage and initiative. I think it's a very, very positive story for us today.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Pamela.
Thank you.
We have been talking to Ms. Pamela Norris, literary scholar and author of the recent book, Eve, A Biography.